evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan, Sudan and the rest of Africa this Friday, November 29, 2024. The chairperson of the Union of Journalists of South Sudan says the national security picked an editor of Dawn newspaper.
We've had cases of people being arrested and released and so forth. For example, we've had just a few days ago, a journalist from Western Equatoria State called Alex Digi has been arrested and then he was released. And this journalist also happened to be a press secretary in the office of the governor in Western Equatoria State.
And delegates at the Tumaini talks in Nairobi say they will resume talks on Monday. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The chairperson of the Union of Journalists of South Sudan says the editor of Dawn newspaper was picked on Thursday by men suspected to be officers from the National Security Service. Patrick Oye says Emmanuel Montuel was picked from his office on Thursday and taken to unknown location. One staff of Dawn newspaper says Montuel was picked after lengthy meeting with men believed to be members of the National Security Services.
According to the staff of the Dawn newspaper yesterday or on Thursday, people went to him. These people are suspected to be officers of the National Security Service. They went to him and they had a meeting with him, which, according to the staff of the Dawn newspaper, lasted for almost an hour. And this meeting was only between Emmanuel Montuel, who is the editor-in-chief, and these security officers. Unfortunately, nobody from the staff attended the meeting, so they do not know the content of the meeting. But thereafter, these officers decided to take along with them the editor-in-chief. This is what the staff told us. So yes, we now believe that he has been arrested by personnel who are suspected to come from National Security Service.
Have you been in touch with the National Security Service to just verify that he is in their custody?
We have not yet verified. We have been trying to get hold of our lawyer so that we start a formal process of following up where he is exactly. We have not yet been successful. And we were also believing that since it is a government, if they are suspected to be national security officers, and indeed if they are, they would produce him in court within 24 hours, according to what the law says. But since this has not happened, we want to engage further with the lawyer and see what next we can do.
What about the media authority? I mean, the media authority always makes statements that they are here to protect the interests of journalists and to make sure that any dispute between journalists, you know, their sources, they will intervene. Any words from the media authority?
Not yet. Not no word yet from media authority. And because we see that since arrest has already been made, the best thing to do is to actually get a lawyer on board and try to make sure that the law is followed as we try to inform media authority. We always urge members of the public or even the members of security that if anyone has any complaint about anyone who works in the media or a media house, they should go to media authority, because by law, media authority is given the mandate to handle these cases. It is only when media authority is unable to handle the case that is when they are supposed to make arrests or go to police. But unfortunately, we see some cases like the one of Montuel. He is arrested. Of course, we still do not know fully why exactly he has been arrested. But the best thing to do would have been to start from media authority.
And who owns the Dawn newspaper? Who are the people behind Dawn newspaper?
What we know is that Montuel is the editor-in-chief, but the owners of the newspaper itself, we have not really investigated to know who are the owners, but we know that Montuel is the editor-in-chief. That is the only information we have at the moment. Unless we go to the Ministry of Justice to find out the registration status, we cannot know who owns the paper.
How many journalists are under detention in South Sudan? I mean, there are always stories about harassment here and there, and you have been vocal advocating for, you know, fair, due process. How many journalists are in government custody in South Sudan?
At the moment, it's only Monchol that we can talk about, but we've had cases of people being arrested and released and so forth. For example, we've had just a few days ago, a journalist from Western Equatoria State called Alex Digi has been arrested and then he was released. And this journalist also happened to be a press secretary in the office of the governor in Western Equatoria State. So that also complicates for us a bit of the issues, because sometimes when somebody is at the level of a press secretary, then you do not know what exactly is arrested for. Is it for a political issue, or is it, you know, so it becomes a bit difficult. We've had that case anyway. He has been released without being taken to court. We've had also a journalist in Eastern Equatoria recently, Sisto, the journalist who was working for Singaita FM, he was also arrested because of a conflict between the church and the media. Okay, the case was also resolved. We have had also a case in Western Equatoria where a journalist was accused of defamation. He was arrested and later released. So we have had cases of arrest and release, arrest and release. Yes, we've had a number of them. And that's why we keep saying before we go to arrest, we should first go to media authority and try to see if the issue can be resolved from there.
The relationship between the government of South Sudan and journalists is that of love and hate. Is there a way this situation could be, you know, resolved through dialogue to make sure that each entity understands the duties and the responsibilities of each other?
Yes, it can be resolved by dialogue. What we believe is that there's a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of bringing journalists and especially government institutions together so that people discuss some of the issues. What are the fears of those government officials, and what are the areas that maybe they feel that journalists are not doing well, so that we avoid a situation where people get arrested? However, the challenge with the issue of, for example, security is that they always have changes, which is, of course, within their rights. For example, the former DG has been removed of the National Security Service. We have a new DG, may come with new ideas. Some officers will be shifted. Maybe officers who are already trained on how to handle media have been shifted to another department. So those kinds of changes make it a bit difficult to always have a smooth sailing. That means each and every time you need to really have meetings, you need to have workshops, bring people together so that you start understanding yourselves. The problem is when the changes are very frequent, then you find it very difficult to resolve some of these problems through dialogue.
That's Patrick Oyet, the president of the Association of Journalists in South Sudan. He spoke to me from Juba. The Kenyan brokered peace talks for South Sudan called Tumaini Initiative will resume on Monday after months of stalemate. The talks launched May 9th incorporated all holdout groups that have not signed the 2018 revitalized peace agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan. Paganamun is the leader of the Real SPLM. He tells me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, that his group is ready to resume the talks on Monday.
As you know very well, in 2018, our position was clear that we were not ready to sign the RRCs, which was imposed on the parties in Khartoum. And actually, the signing of RRCs in Khartoum was a decoy to implement other agreements which the government of Sudan had imposed on South Sudan, or had made the leadership in South Sudan then to agree to, which was basically pursuing their own interest and other regional interest. And that was what was wrong with the 2018 agreement signed in Khartoum, and again re-signed in Addis Ababa. Now, we also said that that agreement was not going to be implemented, and time has proven us right that the agreement has not been implemented. Essentially, what happened was turning the RRCs into a surrender agreement for the opposition to be delivered to Khartoum in return for a lot of oil money claiming to be compensation for igliage and other and other monies that the government of Sudan was just imposing on the government of South Sudan, plus other things, including attempts by the Bashir government to return to control the oil areas as per agreement. Of course, Bashir was overthrown by that time, and Al-Burhan and Hamati continued with that deal, and Dr. Riek Machar was delivered to Juba and became a prisoner of that situation. President Kiir said that the RSS was not designed to be implemented, and that was very much revealing, because it was what was to be implemented are other associated agreements, which were secret deals. And Dr. Riek says there is no political will to implement the RSS. He is right, because it was a deal between Khartoum and Juba and Kampala. And that was wrong.
Yeah, and what makes you to believe that there is a political will to implement the Tumaini initiative if it's initialed as you envision?
The Tumaini initiative, first of all, it is an initiative by President Kiir. When President Kiir and his government walked out from the Rome negotiations and initiated this, we accepted the challenge, we came here, we negotiated, and we have now the 8 protocols. In total, there will be 9 protocols plus implementation matrix. And by the way, the Tumaini consensus is inclusive of the provisions of RRSS that the parties signatories to RRSS have failed to implement over more than 6 years now. And we have included them. We have created strengthened mechanisms to implement, to ensure implementation. We have also created both internal and external guarantees for implementation or to ensure implementation, just as we did with the CPA. And that makes us more confident that we will be able to implement the Tumaini consensus. And actually, the Tumaini consensus is a rescue plan for South Sudan to avoid its disintegration and its collapse into total chaos, as the situation is very clear to you. You can see that South Sudan is falling into a very serious abyss.
You have said that time and again that your aim is to rescue the country from total collapse. I mean, who are working to make this country collapse?
It is a combination of various crises as a result of failure of all the transitional governments since independence to usher South Sudan into a path of a state and nation building. This failure has resulted into a failed state. Also, the policies that have been adopted by the government under the leadership of President Kiir has led to state capture. South Sudan, the state, has been captured, and its resources have been siphoned away. You can see how weakened the state is now. Can you imagine our government is not able to pay the salaries of the civil service, the army, the other organized forces? The entire government is totally bankrupted by the cartels who are associated around the leadership. So there's a total capture of the state. There's a total breakdown of the state. The country is almost in total chaos and lawlessness. There is a lot of community conflict, a lot of breakdown all over the place, and the state is not there to help. Therefore, from all this crisis plus all the conflicts that are there, and plus the natural also crisis that have made South Sudan as a weak, fragile state, so incapable. Like, for example, South Sudan is already one of the first victims of climate change with the unprecedented floods that have come. All this combination of man-made disasters and natural disasters and climate change, which is also man-made by the advanced countries that have emitted a lot of carbon dioxide and caused the global warming and creating this crisis. From all this crisis, South Sudan is collapsing into chaos and disorder.
That's Pagana Mum, the leader of the Real SPLM. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the East African community celebrates its 25th birthday. Find out more after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As celebrations to mark the 25th anniversary of the East African community get underway in Arusha, Tanzania, there's a push for partner states to eliminate barriers that impede cross-border trade to enhance regional economic growth. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The highlight of the celebrations will be a high-level summit on Saturday at the East African Community headquarters in Arusha, to be attended by the leaders of the EAC states. Veronica Nduva is the EAC Secretary General.
The EAC is celebrating 25 years since it restarted again. You know very well the EAC was there in 1967 to 77, and then there was a stop. It paused, and for about 30 years, nothing happened. So this year, which is 25 years since it started, it's a perfect opportunity to reflect on the journey that we have taken, to look at what have been our achievements, what have been our challenges, and where do we hope to move forward.
There are 8 EAC states: Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Rwanda, Somalia, South Sudan, Uganda, and Tanzania. That makes it one of Africa's largest economic blocs. Marie Angelique Umulisa is the EAC Principal Trade Officer.
Over the past 20 years, EAC's exports have increased from $1 billion to just over $8 billion. The EAC has been actively involved in the African Continental Free Trade Area, which brings together 55 African countries, a combined population of 1.4 billion people, and a GDP of $3 trillion. The aim is to create a larger single African market for goods and services.
Umulisa says partner states have already agreed on harmonizing their trade rules. However, as the celebrations get underway, some say the regional bloc has yet to realize its full trade potential. Kisembo Ronex Tendo is the Chief Executive Officer of Africa Mashariki First, an organization that engages the youth to embrace regional integration through art and sport. He challenged the leaders from the EAC member states to lift barriers, to promote free trade, improve regional integration, and facilitate free movement of people within the region.
In terms of policy formulation, but implementation and domestication of the gospel of regional integration needs to be actualized. And this is only when the young people are empowered, when the young people are supported, this is when we can be able to realize that dream.
The EAC traces its origins to the mid-20th century, when Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania formed cooperative ties through shared services such as the East African Railways in 1948. In 1967, shortly after the three nations gained independence, they established the EAC, to foster economic cooperation and integration across East Africa. But differing political and economic policies among the partner states led to the dissolution of the initial bloc in 1977. The treaty to re-establish the East African Community was signed in Arusha on November 30, 1999, and came into force in July 2000. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we go back to Juba, where journalists in South Sudan have expressed fear after one of their members was arrested by security on Thursday. Emmanuel Monchul, who works as the editor-in-chief of Dawn newspaper, was reportedly picked by security officers. The Association for Media Development in South Sudan calls on authorities to explain why Emmanuel was detained. For VOA News, Denis Logonyi reports from Juba.
Some of the journalists in South Sudan have expressed fear for their jobs after the detention of Emmanuel Monchol, the editor-in-chief of the Dawn newspaper, has frightened media houses. Robert is a journalist who did not want to use his real name for fear of government reprisal.
Says the arrest sent fear for his work.
It was a shock for us to receive the report about his arrest. This is not the first time the security operators are arresting journalists in South Sudan. It has been happening, and it's really something that has to stop. We don't feel safe because the moment we heard that one of our colleagues is arrested, it actually instilled fear in us. As we move around the town, we move knowing very well that maybe our days are numbered. Anytime, maybe we'll be taken in. Because nowadays, there are a lot of tension in Juba. The rumors about tension, anything can happen anytime. So this kind of arrest has to stop. Journalists should be allowed to do their work effectively without fear.
Another journalist,
Okech Francis, is a journalist who says the media in South Sudan deserve respect and freedom to do their job.
The situation we journalists go through in this country is always very scary. Protection is very limited for us journalists in the way we do our work. And most of the times we are not looked at as friends. People tend to look at us as enemies, especially to the state. And when we see a person like Monchol being arrested like this, you don't understand why he was arrested. Nobody's explaining why he was arrested. They just pick him and go with him.
He says the detention of journalists is not the right thing for the government to do.
This really makes it more scary for us. Where is the future of journalism? At least we thought by now this country should have seen the need for journalists, the need for people who communicate to them issues that help in the development of the country. But it looks like they still want to sit down on us. They still want to really intimidate us, which is not really good.
Robert calls on the institutions that deal with the safety of journalists to come out to advocate for press freedom.
We like the media authority and the union of journalists to come on board to look into this issue, because we understand if anything happened, it should be the media authority that will handle the issue before the national security comes in. So we like to urge the union of journalists and the media authority to take this issue very seriously. These bodies that are concerned should stand up for journalists and protect them.
The National Security Service spokesperson did not respond to calls for comments of Monchol's detention. Deputy Kumuri later sent a text message that he would respond later because he was in a workshop. Achiro Josephine is the chairperson for the Association for Media Development in South Sudan. She says she is aware of Monchol's detention. She says they are currently engaging the spokespersons of the different government institutions to learn more about access to information.
In fact, we had the information. We are aware that he was arrested, but to be honest, we are still doing our best and to reach out to his friends, to the office, to the colleagues, to know exactly what happened and why he was arrested. We should not see journalists as a threat, rather we complement each other. We are good friends because we, as journalists, we don't do anything that will, you know, betray the image of the country. Rather, we are doing things that will make individuals to correct themselves. So freedom of expression and access to information and safety of journalists for us as journalists is paramount.
In 2013 and 2014, the president enacted the Media Authority Act, the Broadcasting Corporation Act, and the Right of Access to Information Act, which constitute the legal framework for the promotion of press freedom and access to information. But these laws have not prevented repeated and continuous press freedom violations by the National Security Service. According to the World Press Freedom Index 2024, published by Paris-based Reporter Without Borders, or RSF, South Sudan dropped to 136th position compared to last year's position of 118. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we go to Namibia, where Namibians return to vote today in 36 reopened polling stations, 2 days after the country's election was marred by a technical problem. My colleague Yehes Wihu asked reporter Vitalio Angula in Namibia's capital, Windhoek, a little while ago about the general mood in the country and if the delays in the votings were escalating tensions in the historically stable and peaceful Southern African nation.
What happened is that not everybody got a chance to vote. I think the ECN, which is the Electoral Commission of Namibia, did not anticipate the high voter turnout and also in different areas. So what the government did, not what the government did, but what the ECN did, the Electoral Commission of Namibia and the president, is to say that we are going to extend the election date for 2 more days. Because that's the problem we had, that when police stations closed, people were not able to vote. So they've decided to extend the period.
There was also this news about technical problems, including issues with tablets used to register voters and shortages of ballot papers. Talk to us a little about the technical problems.
The technical problem, the voter verification tablet, it seems to heat. The more you use it, the more it heats. The problem is when it heats up, then it doesn't work anymore. So we had that, and it was reported even with the SADC mission and even with the EU mission that this has been a problem, and some people had to wait for their tablets to cool down, or some people had to wait for tablets to be brought from another station or for the IT guy to come and fix it. But these are documented problems. It did happen. Yeah, unfortunately, voting was delayed because of technical glitches.
And Vitalio, the opposition parties were scheduled to meet today and issue a joint statement. Has that happened yet?
Today, I have not received yet an invitation, but I'm sure the political parties will come because of the Namibian democratic system. I think they have been giving the political parties a chance to come and air their grievances. But it's just that it's a time where all the resources are deployed. So sometimes you call a meeting and then the other person is not available.
That's reporter Vitalio Angola speaking with my colleague Yehes Wihub from the Namibia's capital, Windhoek, a little while ago about the general mood in the country after polling. And that's all we prepared for you this Friday, November 29, 2024. We now leave you with some traditional Baka song from Maridi County. This goes to our listeners on Foundation FM. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming live from Washington, from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bill Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.